Aphex should sound familiar to you. It's the scene of another major battle way back at the beginning when the Ark of God was captured. The Philistines apparently used this town, Aphek, as a rallying point. And so all the troops are gathering there at Aphek, getting ready to go out on their expedition, and they are going to attack Israel. The Israelites, it said, are amassing near Jezreel, which is way up here in Galilee. Here's Mount Gilboa, and here is Jezreel. This is a very wide plain that stretches from the coastal regions here all the way up almost to the Jordan River. There's a very, very wide plain. It's very fertile. It's very productive. It's highly populated, but it's also a great place for militaries to play out their little war games because it's easy ground. It's flat. It's not mountainous like most of Israel is. And so the Philistines are marching their troops up along the coastal regions. Remember, this is all Philistine territory over here. And they're going to come up this way and attack Israel through the valley of Jezreel. You'll hear Jezreel actually in the New Testament because it has another name, and that is Megiddo. The valley of Jezreel in the New Testament is called Megiddo, which there's going to be another massive battle fought there, except it's not going to be nearly so long. That battle is going to end in one word. When the Lord Jesus speaks a single word, and everybody on the opposing force is killed by the sword that comes out of his mouth, the battle of Armageddon. So here the Philistines are amassing at Aphek. They've got all their troops there, and the Israelites are amassing up here at Jezreel. This is where David's problems start to get bigger, because as the lords of the Philistines were passing by, passing on by hundreds and by thousands, here's this military parade. You know, militaries, how many of you were in the military? I know several of you were. You were in the army. Did you have to do marching? In the nurses' corps, you had to do some, but... Yep. Okay. Once. How much marching did you do, Jim?
We were lucky. We were out in the coastal range out in California. The furthest we had to go was about 3.5 miles.
Okay. But they taught you how to... But they taught you how to march in formation. A big part of boot camp is learning how to march, isn't it? Dan, he was in the Navy. They didn't have far to march except back and forth on the top of the submarine, right? So. So here's this parade going on when the king of Philistia is inspecting the troops as they go by. And so all the lords of the Philistines, remember, Philistia was sort of divided up into the five major cities of Gath, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Ekron, these cities right here. There would be lords of each of those cities, and they would amass their own little troops, and then they would all come together at Aphek, and they would let the king do his inspection. So here they are, all marching past by, and the lords are sitting with the king, Achish, and they're passing by, and David and his men were passing on in the rear with Achish. And you can see the looks in the lords of the Philistines saying, what are they doing here? What's David doing here? And they say, they're not afraid to say this to Achish, the commanders of the Philistines said, what are these Hebrews doing here? Why might the Philistines have a problem with Israelite soldiers in their army? It's the enemy. You don't know whose side they're on. What are they doing here? Now, it's not that they didn't know that Achish had these men at his disposal. David's been a year and a half in the land of the Philistines. I'm sure news has traveled around that Achish has his own private bodyguard, the Israelite army of David. 600 men, and these are not amateur men. These are highly trained men of war. As we have seen throughout David's wanderings, he has trained these men, he's led them, he's whipped them into a major fighting force. So this would be like 600 elite soldiers. I don't know how many men are in the SEAL teams or some of the Rangers and our elite troops, but this would be like having 600 of those guys, not just 600 of your average infantrymen. Especially back in those days when the army was made up of just any young man that could pick up a weapon, They weren't all nearly so trained, but David's men are elite. And Achish has gotten them in the rear guard because he has told David, you're going to be my bodyguard. And when we go into battle, your job is to protect me. Because the king obviously wants to be very well protected. But the lords of the Philistines say, what are these Hebrews doing here? And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, is this not David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, who has been with me now for days and years? And since he deserted to me, I have found no fault in him to this day. Now, Achish is sincere here. He doesn't know what David's been up to. David's been a little crafty and a little deceitful throughout this whole scenario. But Achish doesn't know anything about it. And so he's standing up for David, vouching for him and saying, look, ever since he was a traitor, he's been loyal. there was that little incident where he turned against Saul, but that's no big deal. He'll never turn against me. Well, the Philistine lords don't like this answer too much. But the commanders of the Philistines, verse 4, were angry with him, and the commanders of the Philistines said to him, now I want you to notice who's talking to who here. These are the commanders of the Philistines, and who are they talking to? Okay, commanders, where's the king? Should be up here, right? King, then commanders. But here they are telling this guy what to do. This is, again, why I say I think Achish is a fairly new king. And he doesn't quite have control of the Philistines cemented under his authority. We know that in the instances of monarchy, it does take a while to get everybody loyal to you. They go along at first just because that's the way you do it. You don't fight against the new king. But they're not exactly with him heart and soul. And so being a young man, these lords of the Philistines are probably much older men, and they're saying, no, we're going to call you on this one. You send that guy home. No way are we going into battle with a bunch of Hebrew elite soldiers standing behind us. Send the men back that he may return to the place to which you have assigned him. He shall not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become an adversary for us. For how could this fellow reconcile himself to his Lord? Would it not be with the heads of these men here? And they're going to recite this song that they used to sing about David in Israel. Is this not David of whom they sang to one another in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s? They're looking at Achish saying, do you not know who this is? They used to sing praises about this guy. It would kind of be like the British Army hiring George Washington and his most well-trained troops to guard General Cornwallis. And saying, we're going into battle and you've got Washington and 600 of his best men guarding General Cornwallis. You don't think this is a bad idea? I mean, isn't this George Washington? They sing songs about him. He chopped down the cherry tree and told the truth about it after all. And so the lords of the Philistines are thinking in their minds, we're going to put the best troops of our enemy behind us. Something's not sounding right about this, king. Yes, you're the king, but you know what? We're just going to tell you, you send these guys home right now. This is a big enough problem. You send them home. So, verse 6, Achish called David and said to him, I love this. Who is Achish? King of? Who do the Philistines worship? Actually, several. Yeah, several different gods, right? You remember Jehovah defeated their god Dagon when the ark was in his temple? Okay. What does Achish say to David? No? As the Lord lives, Achish, a pagan king, is taking an oath in the name of David's God. David must have had some good effect on him. At least he's had a chance to probably hear about Jehovah some, but as the Lord lives, you have been honest. Do you think maybe that stung David a little bit? Ooh, you've been honest. And to me, it seems right that you should march out and in with me in the campaign. I want you along with me, for I have found nothing wrong in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Key word in that sentence, found. Just because you didn't find it, Achish, doesn't mean it isn't there, right? How often did you say to your kids, don't let me catch you doing that ever again? And we mean, don't do that again. But they hear, I need to be a little more sneaky about it. Mom doesn't want to catch me. Okay, I'll do my best to kind of keep it hidden from you. I have found nothing wrong in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, the lords do not approve of you. So here we do see the king getting pushed around a little bit by his lords. He's going to go along with them. Verse 7, so go back now and go peaceably, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. So here is Achish giving in to the demands of the lords of the Philistines. Again, probably because he's a young king, he's new on the throne, not more than a couple of years there, and he doesn't quite have their full support. And if he wants their support, he's going to have to go along with them on this one. So he's telling David to go back home. And David, sneaky as ever, verse 8, David said to Achish, but what have I done? Any of your kids ever say that to you? What did I do? They want to see if you actually know. They want to see if you've, oh, that maybe they want to know, well, which thing that I did wrong does Mom and Dad know about? Because I want to be careful not to confess too much here. And so David's being, he's being very cautious here. He said, well, you know, what did I do that you're sending me away, that they don't trust me? What have you found in your servant from the day that I entered your service until now, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? Which lord the king and which enemies is David talking about? Saul. Who is David's king? Who is David's king? He's confessed this on several occasions. Saul. Who are the enemies of Saul? You find David being a little ambiguous on purpose here, because he says, Achish, I really want to go fight against the enemies of my king. And Achish is thinking my king refers to himself, and David might be pulling a little double meaning here and saying, well, you know, I'm not really talking about you. I want to go fight against the enemies of my lord the king. I want to have a chance to, even if Saul never accepts me, which I know he's not, David hasn't shied away yet from an opportunity to attack Israel's enemies and to strengthen his country and to benefit King Saul. He's always sought King Saul's benefit, even though Saul has been out to get him. And so I think we might get a little hint here as to what David's plan may have been, and that the lords of the Philistines are probably right, that in the heat of the battle, how good would it have been for Israel if David and his men entered the fight on the side of the Israelites? And they get the Philistines trapped between an elite force of Israelite soldiers and the rest of the Israelite army. That would have been bad for the Philistines. Would have been great for David. And so we find David here caught in this mix. I think his plan probably was that he was going to end his alignment with Philistia at this battle. But he does find himself in this sticky situation that if he gets caught, he and his men are dead. And it's all because it goes back to that decision he made way back to leave Judah after God had told him to stay there. God told him, I want you to stay in Judah. But David despaired of it. He said, Saul's eventually going to catch me. He's going to kill me. It's all going to be over. I'm going to Philistia. And he went. And so now we find him, to some degree, having to sleep in the bed that he made. He's reaping the consequences of his decision. And here he is, stuck between this rock and a hard place with Philistia going to war against Israel. Now, which side is David loyal to? We know which side David's loyal to. Israel. He's never going to turn against Israel. But which side likes David? Not really either one of them. He finds himself in this difficult spot because he knows Saul wants him dead. And so if he goes to the battle and he starts fighting for Israel, do you think Saul might take an opportunity in the heat of battle to have David done away with? You think the Philistines, as soon as they see him turn, might take an opportunity to have David done away with? Absolutely. This is a tough spot for David to be in. And it all goes back to that decision to leave Israel. You ever find yourself in a spot seems impossible and it is based on a decision you made that you look back on and say, boy, I wish I hadn't done that. Over and over, yes. That's probably most of us, Esther. Yep. Say, oh my goodness, was that a stupid thing to do? But here I find myself, I've done it, I can't go back and undo it, and now I'm just looking around saying, this is really bad. I have gotten myself into some serious trouble here. And David, or Achish, answered David, I know that you are as blameless in my sight as an angel of God. Again, might be stinging David a little bit. Ooh, I've been lying for a year and a half to this guy. Nevertheless, the commanders of the Philistines have said he shall not go with us up to battle. Now then, rise early in the morning with the servants of your Lord who came with you, and start early in the morning and depart as soon as you have light. So David set out with his men early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines. But the Philistines went up to Jezreel. So David has to make the trek from Aphek, which is here, right about in the central portion, all the way down to Ziklag. I'm going to put on our little ruler here to show you something. This is a little bit of information we need to hang on to until next week, okay? Aphek, if we draw this line, is about 52.28 miles. It's roughly a two-day march from Aphek to Ziklag. Okay. So David is going to be heading back to Ziklag, to his home. It's going to take him 2 days to get there. We're not sure how long he's been gone. The rest of the Philistines are going to march up here, and they are going to Jezreel. So they're coming up here to the valley of Jezreel to meet the Israelite army. That's the setting. Now, when we look at this story, it starts off with, now the Philistines had gathered, which tells us that this story actually happens before the story right before it, which was Saul and the witch of Endor. When Saul went to consult with the medium, what did Samuel tell him? Tomorrow, you're going to join me. So that account happens on the eve of battle. This account with David is happening several days before it, which we're going to see a little bit more as we get into the narrative next week, because it's going to take David 2 days, 2.5, maybe 3 days to march back to Ziklag. We're going to find out what happens when he gets there. So that the battle hasn't happened yet. It's going to take a couple of days for the Philistines to march up to Jezreel, but the storm is brewing, and it's going to be big. There are some momentous events going on here. And chapter 29 sort of leaves us at this cliffhanger where God has worked in the situation pretty amazingly to spare David a very difficult circumstance. That here David was about to be thrown into the midst of this battle where both sides want him dead. But he knows his allegiance to Israel has to take priority because of his allegiance to Jehovah. This is his people. I can't fight against his people. I can't fight against his king. He's shown that on two different occasions. David is unwilling to fight against King Saul. So what's he going to do in this battle? But you see how God delivered him from it? The Philistines come up and say, not a chance are you going with us into this battle. No way, we don't trust you. And in a mundane sort of way, God miraculously spares David the consequences of his decision. For the last year and a half, David's been building this scenario in his life by deceiving Achish and telling Achish that, oh, I'm fighting against all the enemies of the Philistines. And he's been building this reputation as someone that is pro-Philistia and anti-Israel. He's been lying about it, and that's been building and building and building until it culminates in this point where the king says, you're coming with me to fight Israel. Yay! And David's saying, okay, what am I going to do? Here's the point. Even though we're leaving on a bit of a cliffhanger, David's heading back to Ziklag. The battle's still going to happen, but David knows he doesn't have any part in it. We have that saying, you've made your bed, now sleep in it. Do sinful decisions have consequences? Well, you better believe they do. But aren't you glad God doesn't always say, you've made your bed, now sleep in it? How many times have you found God deliver you out of the consequences of your own stupid decisions? And He reaches down and rescues you and says, yeah, that was dumb, but I'm going to rescue you. I'm going to relieve some of those consequences and I'm going to bring you over here. And look at what God did for David. Is it David's fault he's in this situation? Absolutely. He's made some really bad decisions here. We can't blame him. I mean, we can understand if you put yourself in David's situation, you can say, I get it, David. I understand why you went the way you did. But we can also step back and say, but God told you not to. You shouldn't have done it. And we can do the same thing with anybody in this room and any of the decisions you've made. We can look at and say, I understand why you did it. It makes sense. Doesn't mean you should have done it, though. But here's the mercy of our God, that He doesn't leave us to deal with all of the consequences of our sinful decisions. Case in point, we took communion this morning. And how many of the consequences of your sinful decisions are you going to have to endure throughout eternity? None. You know why? Because Jesus already took it. Isn't God good? That's why guys like Rob and Mark can write a song. My song is love unknown. The Savior's love for me. Love to the loveless shown that they might lovely be. God's working some marvelous things in David's life. He's going to learn some huge lessons even through his failures. And He does the same thing for us. Folks, we are not always going to make good decisions. That's just who we are. It doesn't excuse us, but it is a reason. And praise God that we have a merciful God who knows that we're but dust, who remembers our frame and has mercy on us, and doesn't always make us suffer the consequences of our decision. Two extremes to avoid in that. The first one is to say, well, I'm going to be really hard on myself so that I never make another bad decision. The other extreme is to say, well, because God's going to be merciful, it doesn't matter. I can just do whatever I want. God says that's not the way to go. Because He's merciful to us, we're supposed to try harder, to keep striving, to do it right, and to make decisions that are pleasing to Him in accordance with His Word. But also to make sure that we've got mercy on other people because we have been mercied in amazing ways, just like David was. So next week, we'll get into chapter 30. The lesson will be troubles aplenty. You think David's been spared from some of the consequences of his decisions, but wait till we get to the next chapter and see what's going on. David's life isn't getting any easier just yet. He's still got some troubles to go through. So. We're a few minutes early. I think I took you like 5 minutes late last week, so it just about evens out on you. Any questions or comments?